What are you guys selling?
You're drowning and I throw you a life jacket. Would you grab it? Yes. Good. Pick up 200 shares. I won't let you down.
Pay him. Pay that man his money.
Ask them how they'd like to see 30, 40% returns. What are they going to say? No? I don't want to see those returns?
Where's the money, Lebowski?
You're going to make a lot of money, right?
Be aggressive. Learn how to push.
Show him a 3% return, and I'll trust you to watch his kids for the weekend.
I'm a big fan of money.
Move around. Motion creates emotion.
I did not know that.
That's it. I'm done.
Blowing up Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tom Ricky on the board. SP Futures down 375. NASDAQ Futures down 12. That just happened in the last minute. We were up 2 minutes ago. Now we're not. But who knows? We could pop right back up. Do we have Carl, or is he already fleeing?
Oh, no. I don't have a rule that, in general, I don't fool around with the spoos in the pre-market. So I'm not in this.
Well, you could have sold 5 minutes ago and bought them back and be cackling on us.
Well, that's true, but I didn't. I was filling my cup full of espresso.
I thought maybe you'd be very worried, actually.
Why would I be very worried?
Because I'm looking at this tropical storm / hurricane. And I keep up in the map, and it looks to me like it's heading right for your house.
Well, yeah, and we might get a little bit of a blowjob here.
It says here, Carl's house. 10 inches of rain in 10 minutes.
You know, I always love that. Now, if you're down in Asheville, you might have a water problem. Things that come from the south here have this, there's this geological phenomenon called a mountain in the way.
Yeah, well, that's a problem.
Well, it's a problem for people on the other side of it. But storms that come from the west frequently get us very wet, and that's actually right now we'd really like that because it's been very dry.
It's been very, very dry here too. We had some rain on, of course, it didn't really need to rain on Sunday, but after like 30 days of no rain, it rained on Sunday.
We got a little bit overnight, but it was like, yeah, okay, you know, it's just, I mean, you could hear it outside. That was about it. But the thing is that we've, you know, you get these storms that come from the south, which, of course, is the direction that hurricanes tend to come from, right? And they run into this thing called a mountain first, and they dump all their water on the other side of it. And then by the time they get up here, we're lucky if we get anything at all. So, it may be, okay, you know, put the lawn chairs away because, you know, it's blowing 40 miles an hour by the time it gets up here. So what? But now, if you're down in the Big Bend area, by the way, you know, all these prognostics, I've been watching this thing for a while. There's an old model called the GFS that's not one of the super duper hyperscale, you know, we got AI, you know, that kind of thing, right? It's been around forever. And surprisingly enough, that particular model has had a lock on this storm, although not exactly where it's going, but it's had a lock on this storm now for over a week. Before there was even a,
this,
you know,
is this one of these ones that came all the way from Africa or no?
No, actually, the interesting thing about this is that this one formed out of a little piece of energy that was sitting off the Honduras, and it's in a place that's kind of where they tend to form this time of year. Okay, the long track stuff that comes off Africa is you know earlier in the year. Once you get, you know, in the end of September, early October, the mischief tends to be local. And this model is not one of the, you know, is not one of the new super duper ones. And all of a sudden this year it has locked up on this thing pretty early on. I mean, now it's been back and forth in terms of exactly where it's going, but that you got something that actually verified out of the, one of these old things is kind of surprising because this is not a model that typically has been a good performer in recent years. And, you know, the last 10, 15, it's one that nobody ever used to pay any attention to because it was usually just, you know, full of you-know-what. But this year, it's for some reason, you know. So it'll be an interesting, when the season's over, it will be interesting to try to figure out why, you know, exactly what weather pattern set up that this thing was actually able to be.
I wonder if it has to do with the quick changing from El Nino to La Nina.
Well, the, I mean, you know, that does that changes the upper air dynamics a lot. But this, the other thing that's interesting about this particular path is that it looks like. Now, of course, you know, we don't. It, the bad news is that you don't even have a really well formed center of circulation yet.
But until it's, but you it's big, get, it's big.
Well, yeah, but until you get that, exactly what sort of you know, where is this storm is a problem. And so once we get it, which as of this morning I looked at it when I first got up, isn't really there yet.
No,
that's a serious problem, because if the center tightens up, you know, 30 miles off one direction or the other, that can be 100 miles or more 2 days later when this thing gets you. So this is really very fluid right now. I
mean, right now they've got it coming, kind of taking a right turn as it goes north. Then in Georgia, making a left turn, that's where you say heading for your house.
Yeah, heading for my house, right, exactly. But the thing is that where it's going, it looks like it's going to get, you know, pretty nasty, and I can see kind of sort of where that scenario could unfold in terms of, you know, getting much stronger quite fast. On the other hand, I'm not completely sold on that yet.
Well, is the Gulf cooled at all?
Or no, it's not. It's not the Gulf that this time of year, it's always very warm, okay, because, you know, it's had all summer to cook, right?
When does it start dropping a degree or two, like another couple of weeks? Not even really?
Yeah, not really. I mean, you got plenty of energy in the Gulf until, you know, second, third week of October. So, I mean, there's plenty there to really, you know, cause trouble. The bigger problem is that there's a large blob of dry air that's sitting over the Gulf, and they the prognostication is that the sinkage that comes from that's going to, you know, is going to go away. And when it does, then of course, you know, now you've got the tools and, you know, the necessary things for rapid intensification, which is of course what everyone's.
Yeah, they're going from a tropical storm to a Category 3 in like 24 hours here.
Yeah, there's a huge band of dry air that's basically sitting over the entire Gulf from, you know, all the way from the tip of the Keys in Florida all the way north right now. And that's, and you know, the prognostication is that's going to break. If it doesn't, you're not going to get that kind of rapid intensification, because, you know, of course, you know, that just kind of strips the energy away from it. But where it's prognosticated to go is pretty much the best possible place for a nasty one to go.
So where the last one was, it said Bend in Florida where nobody lives, right?
Well, that's, I mean, you know, yeah, I mean, there's people there, but not a whole lot of people. And so, I mean, if you want to look at where the least damage to property is, you know, is possible, it would be there.
What, I tell you, my, there's a few of us, the way the OEX pit, I'm known, yesterday's news was set up, even though it was raining on some people there were individual spots in the pit that were kind of unique, and we had one. I say we, a gentleman named Ron and I, and actually it was a third guy. It was right next to the broker against the rail. So if you really liked each other, you could put two people there if you needed to. But if you didn't, it was a great spot because you could lean on the rail and you're right next to a broker.
Right.
So we shared this spot for 15 years. And or if it was busy, we could both squeeze in. Or in the morning, he liked to trade. He left at 10 o'clock and played basketball and never came back, and I'd showed up at 10 and never left. So it was, I could never leave, because then I, you know, I would forget what I was doing and stuff. So, but going 8:30 to the close every day is was a little much. So 10 to 3:30 was plenty, and I would put all the stuff around the rest of the floor with my guys for the first hour and a half and get my position back to where I wanted it, and then I'd enter the pit and mess it up again, right?
but yeah,
that's kind of what you do. But his parents had a place in. We used to call the Redneck Riviera down in Biloxi.
Yeah.
And
that's a little west of, you know, that's a few hour drive west of what I used to call the Redneck Riviera near Destin. So, yeah.
So his parents had a condo. I'm going to say there was a beach. There was a bunch of stuff like on that side of the road, you know, stores and stuff.
Right.
Then there was their parking lot and their place. So they were a good, you know, I'm going to say, 1,000 yards maybe from the water, at least, maybe even that. So one of the hurricanes after Katrina whacks right there, right? So he goes down there. He goes, the place is a slab. There's nothing left. He goes, What happened to the dresser? What happened to the bed? I mean, it's like God cleaned it up. You know, where did everything go? It's got to be somewhere, right? And of course, the insurance company said it was all water, not wind. Of course, there was nobody there. You know, that didn't know what it was, and it took, I don't know, 4 or 5 years for them to get 50 cents on the buck or something from the insurance guys or some crap, and nobody ever rebuilt or anything. I don't think it's just probably still a slab. It's pretty crummy, actually, what happened, but that was a because yeah, they said it was one thing, somebody else said it was wind, but the fact is there was nobody there, so nobody knew if the water hit it or the wind hit it or what, or some combination of both. But they were pretty far inland for the water to hit it, but I guess you can go that far. They weren't inland, but they weren't on the water either, type of thing. And this is yeah, the thing was a slab down there with it. Well, that's cool. I don't think Then I ended up not went that long after that. I went to his dad's wake, so I don't think they ever rebuilt or went down there again. But that was another funny thing. My mom and his dad pretty much died on the same day, so he came to my mom's wake on a Monday, and after the funeral and everything, the next day I went to his dad's wake, and that. He never even told me. I don't think he even knew, but his dad was a destroyer captain in the South Pacific.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I mean, some of these guys you never even knew. I went to my uncle's wake, and there were people there, and I knew because I knew him since I was a kid, but there were all his medals from, he was a fighter pilot, and he had a bunch of kills. I mean, none of those guys really even talked about it. They would no more stand up in the middle of a hockey game in uniform when they're 80 years old and the man in the moon. They couldn't wait. They didn't want to kill people. They just wanted to get home and get it over with. And they didn't want to talk about it. They didn't want to write books about it. So it was just a whole different view of the world. Hey, speaking of the world, what is we're cruising into the election here. I couldn't believe I heard both candidates talk about inflation the other day, and I'm sitting there flipping coins whether was Harris was dumber on the subject. She's not a dumb lady. Then the lady from Newsmax something like that. Whatever I'm forced to listen to for a little while once a week. And she goes, well, that is about the dumbest thing I've ever heard. Let's go to, like, our guy and see the difference. And Trump was just as ignorant. Started talking about oil.
Yeah, I mean, you know, one of the things that just stuns me about this is that both of these people, and you know, one of them's going to end up in the seat, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's the way it's going to be. Both of these people think that there's this magical machine that creates inflation.
Yeah.
And neither one of and what I find so fascinating about the so-called debate, if you will, between these two clowns, is that Trump. This is very similar to what happened to Carter. The difference is that Carter didn't try to throw it on anybody else. He just shut up and swallowed, basically. There was a time when decorum was, I mean, everybody understood. If you're sitting in the left seat and a plane crashes, guess what? It's your fault, even if it's the other jackass that didn't tighten up the bolts on the engine, right?
Right.
But we don't live in that world today, all right? So, and the other problem is we have a group of people, the majority of the population, that number one can't think their way out of a paper bag, and then the second problem is anything that doesn't fit in the real estate of a phone screen is not true. Okay,
well, that's right.
So you know, to some extent, I mean, I wrote a piece the other day, published yesterday, I believe, on this whole charade about so-called debates. Okay. And Harris is now screaming because Trump is basically said, you know, up yours about showing up on CNN. Everybody has forgotten that literally the day Harris played palace coup and forced Biden off the ballot and took it without a single primary vote, okay, which, by the way, regardless of how you feel about the primary process, one of the reasons to have one is so that people are forced to defend their positions before they actually end up as the candidate. Okay.
Well, there's no doubt.
And that didn't happen. So well, here we are.
Let me interrupt for a second. I think you're spot on, Carl, but it's actually a little more than that, because as much as we may rail about Iowa being the spot, you have to put in some serious dues going to every little breakfast joint and every PTA meeting in Iowa. And I got news for you. Those blue-haired ladies in Iowa don't hold back. If they don't like what you're saying, they tell you. I mean, it's a way of actually having to put yourself in front of the electorate. Iowa probably even more so than New Hampshire, but the two of them together. I'm not saying they should be the states. I'm not saying it would be the system that I would devise. But the fact is, you got to put your fanny right in front of those people. And if they tell you your party sucks, they're not going to hold back.
I mean, and something about being 80 years old, not giving a blank about what anyone thinks of you, right? So there's that kind of process. Obviously, in this case, did happen on the Republican side, whether you agree with the process or not. Didn't happen on the Democrat side at all.
Right.
And so, and part of that is just due to the fact that the way our system works, the current sitting president is the head of that political party. Okay. So therefore, that person presumptively has the nomination. Now, you can try to knock him off.
Has anybody ever been? The answer is probably there's probably somebody somewhere. Has anybody, a sitting president, ever been knocked off in the primary process? I think it's happened once, but I couldn't begin to tell you.
I think it has happened once, but it's almost impossible. Okay. So, but nonetheless, when we got this change, I think it was literally the same day. If it wasn't, it was a day or two later. Fox News came out and said, we want to host a debate. And Trump immediately said, sure. And Harris said nothing. All right. Now, all of a sudden, Harris is like, well, we got to show up on CNN. Well, wait a minute. What happened to Fox?
Well, no matter what, nothing's going to make Trump sound good next to this lady. She was on the debate team in college. She's an attorney. She used to cross-examine people.
Okay, that is
her forum. It's not his.
By the way, just a couple of points on that. Well, she may have been on the debate team, but I didn't hear a single cogent answer out of one of the questions that was asked during the last one.
Well, okay. Let me ask you before.
Now, I'm not saying that Trump did any better.
Let's back up here. This is sometimes I like to get, and I've learned this from you, and I don't know if it's a good thing to know or not. Sometimes I like to get back behind what the answers ought to be, and then I'm eternally looking for, are they that dumb or are they that capable of lying?
Right.
I don't think, as much as people say she's stupid, he's an idiot, whatever. The fact is, they're not dumb people. They wouldn't be there if they were. I mean, come on. There's only been one of the two of them is going to be president. There's only been 46 of them, or whatever the hell it's been, 50 in the whole history of the country. So it's not like you can be an idiot and get there. You may not agree with you or me, and you may not, your skill set may be anywhere near what you and I want to have in there. But the fact is, they're not idiots. I mean, they have a skill set that maybe all of us wish we had, right? Whatever it is. Like George Stigler used to say, the Nobel Prize winner, politics is a business. You just don't understand it.
Oh, absolutely.
But what are the chances? I mean, you and I talk twice a week. We have other people. The last two administrations, collectively, through bad policy and through trying to get money to rich people and take it away from other people, have essentially, since 2000 really, but certainly since 2008, it purposely inflated the situation, and then they ran into COVID, and they got caught, where the sun don't shine, because then they had to go even worse, or never mind they did. What are the chances? I don't think either one of them is as dumb as they sounded on the inflation thing last week. What are the chances of Trump getting on there and saying, well, because of COVID and because of administrations that came to me, we were already lying on inflation, and now with the COVID, under my watch, we upped money supply 40% in 18 months. This is what happened. By the way, now to fix it, we have to drain 3% out a year for 5 years or 2%, or make sure the goal is not 2% inflation, it's zero for 10 years so people can catch it. What are the chances, even if he knew it, of that buffoon saying that? Or her saying, wait a minute, we could have fixed this in the last 4 years. We didn't. We made it just as bad because guess what? The right people are making dough. We love it. And neither one of them, if they actually knew the situation, They don't want the question because the answer is not palatable to anybody.
Well, the thing is, they got the question.
Yeah, but it's still debate. Neither
one of them answered it.
Well, because
and
they're going to bumble it around.
The reason they didn't answer it is exactly what you just pointed out. Okay, what are you going to say? I got a mayor and a bunch of non-government organizations, a bunch of nonprofits that have managed to funnel $700 million into their own pockets, supposedly helping people, and what they really did was farm them. What are you going to say about this whole
They're never going to admit an error.
Chief, what are you going to say about this whole green energy nonsense?
Well,
okay. Look, nobody wants to spoil the environment, all right? I mean, duh. We all have to breathe that air. We all have to drink that water. And so you'd have to be out of your frickin' mind to be interested in doing that.
Well, the only thing is, if you have a spot all set up in Siena in Italy for your retirement, and you dump a bunch of crap in the stream next to you, get the CEO bonus and leave, there are people that are that cold.
Oh, absolutely. And so, but here's the reality of it, though. How get either one of these people and say, look, you want to do all this renewable stuff, well, that's very nice, except it's unreliable, and I insist that when I turn my light switch on that the lights actually work. Therefore, you have to pay for a dirtier alternative that is available all the time in case the clean one doesn't. Okay? Now, are you willing to pay the price of doing that? Oh, by the way, in case you haven't noticed, every single thing that is manufactured, made, provided in an economy requires energy behind it. So if you make this decision, you're going to put 40% into the inflation rate over the next 10 to 15 years, and there's nothing you can do about it because that is what's going to occur. And if you think that's BS, power is 11 cents a kilowatt hour here, and it's 40 cents a kilowatt hour in California, where they did it already.
If you use a little bit of common sense, which is probably going to come out of the dictionary one of these days, you would say the engineering, the development of this renewable energy really gets better by the month. If we just use our head and as it improves, make incremental moves into that area where every year it's 1% more renewable, 2% the next year, and as it gets more and more reliable in some places, that would be my way of doing it.
Chief, it can't get more reliable. The sun doesn't always shine.
When you say that, I don't know why, but I was fascinated with not only the structure itself, but the people story behind Hoover Dam, right? So right. I've been out there probably six times, and every time I learn something.
I think it's an engineering marvel.
But I look off to the, let's see, if you're pointing downriver, you're pointing south, right? All right, so I look off to my right, so I'm looking southwest. There is a piece of flatland there that I don't even think a cockroach can live there with the sun beating on it.
Oh, and you could stick a bunch of solar panels
there. You could put them right there. The wires are right there. And right. Oh, by the way, in Vegas, which is pretty close, in California, which the wires somehow get to, I don't see most of your electrical draw is during the daytime for air conditioning. So in that particular area...
This place is where it works. I'm not arguing that.
Yeah, but I'm saying that would be 5% of the power used in Las Vegas just at the time they need it. And yet there isn't one out there.
Right.
People got them on their roof in Wisconsin. I don't get it.
You don't get it. You don't.
Well, I
don't
do get it because the money's involved. But
it's not grift and fraud.
But in terms of intelligence... I mean, what are we doing here?
Well, what you're doing here is you're also at the same time, you're putting your finger on the scale, all right? You know, the Adam Smith invisible hand is supposed to resolve these kinds of questions, right? Of course,
not when government gets involved.
And we all know that Adam Smith is not perfect either, right? That, you know, but what we have today... is a bunch of people who are just flat out lying about not only what's happening, but what their so-called plan to do will do to address it. Everybody wants to say, we can't use coal, it's dirty, it's nasty, da-da-da-da-da, it's, you know, the planet's getting hot, whatever. Okay, look, the facts are, just had a study that was published. These guys went and essentially, I don't know how accurate they were, but they attempted to reconstruct the global mean temperature going back like 500 million years, okay, which, I mean, that's like a ridiculously long period of time. The whole idea that it's never been hotter is a load of BS. Secondly, this, and far more importantly, where current glaciation is disappearing, for example, in the Alps, we're finding hard proof that during the medieval climate optimum, there were humans. Now, this was buried under, you know, 50 feet of ice.
Yep.
And now it's exposed because the ice is receding. Well, guess what? Rods from the gods did not put that stuff there. And incidentally, that was during the period of time up to from like 13, 1400 up until about 1900. There was a cold period. Prior to that, there was a warm period. That's how Greenland got its name. And incidentally, there were no SUVs. Okay? And humans were not burning coal to make electricity because there
was
no electricity.
Do you have any idea how much carbon dioxide those big horses used to give off?
Oh, you know, not that much. No. So, and the thing is, which way would you like it? Because here's the...
We got to continue this on Friday. I think we have Joel and Kenny, but I know you're around in case. We'll continue this one because what are we going to talk about after the election? This is crazy. S&P futures up 2, NASDAQ futures up 14. As we continue,
We'll talk about the crash that's coming.
Yeah, I'm dying to find the money supply numbers this week. I have a feeling they're to the moon, but we'll see. We'll be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. As you all know, the broad markets, especially tech, have been hot for a while. Lots of reasons. New technology, small fixed income returns, a lot of Fed cash, maybe some good management. Recently, however, the rates on fixed income investments, even U.S. Treasury, have risen from the very low levels. Treasuries are more attractive. There might even be some interesting bonds out there. Also, the bull run has some leading stocks with historically high valuations, maybe making long-only positions a little riskier. So what to do? I think the answer is flexibility. The market may keep going higher. It may not. It could even go down. Is fixed income a thought for some part of the portfolio? Rates are not zero anymore. You may want to protect some gains. Think about some rebalancing. Address some growing concentration issues. Maybe thinking about commodities. We at PTI may have a solution just right for you. Open an account at PTI Pro Direct, PTI's online trading platform using the Interactive Broker high-end platform. There you will find competitive rates and solid execution across all product lines and traditionally high interest on money balances. In addition, at any time you can seamlessly decide for fixed income investments to access Dan Janitas at Kratos Capital for management services. Dan and his team work tirelessly to achieve the highest returns they can, whatever risk category you are comfortable with. You can also quickly access my team for investment services and a wide array of investment strategies on the security or commodity side, protective strategies, concentration issues, or straight long. In one place, you'll be able to be flexible and ride whatever the future market holds with people you are used to hearing and trusting every day. Need help? You got it. Don't need help? That's okay, too. You'll have a great self-management platform with help always available. This market can change on a dime. I believe, like everyone else, having the right people there if needed is the way to go. Call me at 312-663-4310. Or email me at tom@ptisecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Here, right now. Right now.
Well, welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howell. Cardo on the board. S&P futures up 5. NASDAQ futures up 27. That's where we were when we came in. In the last half hour, they dipped under and under back up. Buy the dip. If you made money on the short side, you had to get out quick. Over in Europe, we've got the DAX up 114.6%, FTSE up 25.3%, CAC ran up 105.4%. The China has put out some stimulus measures today. We got to keep stimulating these markets. Have to. China. Mainland China star notched best day in 4 years. 4% on PBOC policy easing. Shanghai is up 114, back over 2,800. It's 4% up. Hang Seng up 753, 4% up. And we've got the Nikkei up 216.6%, 37,940. Poor money in the system. This is now going worldwide again. It looks to me like it's got some legs. So we're You know, we're hanging on to our gold and our silver and everything here because I think everything, well, I don't think everything's going up. It's going up, it looks like, every day. I don't need me to tell you that. Yesterday we were up 61 on the Dow, 16 in the S&P, 25 in the NASDAQ, up but not that much. Bonds, 10 years, however, up another 6 basis points, 3.79. This inflation is liable to pile its way into this 10-year rate. The Bund unchanged, 2.17. Japan down 5 basis points, 0.81. As they obviously are pouring money in over there. Oil, up $1.83. It's inflating here a little bit. It's still only 72.20, but it's up from 67 in like 5 days. That's a lot. Brent up $1.78, 75, 68. Natural gas up 4 cents, 265. Arbob up 4 cents, 203. Gold up 270, 26.55, at all-time high. Now we got to get, what's her name, Sheena Easton? We got to get the song on here, Ricky. It's somewhere on an all-time high, the Bond film. Silver up 12 cents, 31.20. Copper up 10 cents, 4.45. We have the euro dollar unchanged at 111. The pound unchanged, 133. Japan up down a little bit, 144. Bitcoin, I'm going to bet this is up too. Yes, it is. Up 177.63, 546. When you lower your dollars, the rest of the stuff goes up. Ricky, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports.
Morning, Chief. It's currently 6:35 a.m. here in beautiful Chicago. 64 degrees right now with a high of 66. Kind of saying goodbye to the summer, but we still have some periods of rain today, so beware of slower travel and probably some reduced visibility, so drive safely, please. Tonight will be mostly cloudy with a low of 62 degrees. On to Phoenix, Arizona, 74 degrees right now with a high of 107. Sunny with the temperature approaching the record of 108 set in 2002. Excessive heat warning is in place. Tonight will be clear with a low of 78 degrees. On the traffic in Chicago, inbound Kennedy from Monroe, 16 minutes. We're looking at about 45 minutes. Inbound Edens from Lane Cook. Inbound Eisenhower from Wolf, 39 minutes. Inbound Dan Ryan from 95th, 23 minutes. And Stevenson from 294 to the Dan Ryan is 32 minutes. Lastly, sports. MLB yesterday, the Cubs lose to the Phillies 6-2, and the Diamondbacks lose to the Giants 6-3. Today we got back-to-back games, Cubs and Diamondbacks. Cubs play the Phillies at 5:40 p.m. The Diamondbacks play the Giants at 8:40 p.m. and the White Sox play the Angels at 6:40 p.m. Lastly, the NFL. Last Sunday, the Bears lost to the Colts 16-21, sadly, and the Cardinals lose to the Lions 13-20. And this Sunday, September 29, we got the Bears playing the Rams at 12 p.m. and the Commanders playing the Cardinals at 3:05 p.m. Back over to you, Chief.
My Bear prediction now is down to 5-12.
Oh wow!
Yeah.
Are they really playing that bad?
Well,
I haven't really.
The other teams in the division are all real good. They could lose two games to all three of those teams. That's six right there.
That's sad, man.
Yeah. Well, we'll see. We have Joel.
We do. You sure do, Chief.
How
this
you doing,
could
bud?
Be this could be an old sports segment here.
Well, it is interesting. Some of the football teams have sure changed around. I don't know how the hell they ever had the Irish up there 6 before the season started. They sure didn't deserve that. Where do you want to start? Want to do college?
Well, I mean, I think we first let's go in importance in where we're at in during the season, and we got to go to baseball.
Yeah.
And you've seen my Motor City Kitties, right?
Yeah.
They were 8.5 out 2 weeks after the All-Star break. Bunch of no-name kids. Now they are tied with Minnesota for the last playoff spot. Excuse me, they're a half a game ahead of Minnesota for the last wild card.
Yep.
And they're tied with the Royals with 5 games to go, the 3 of which, the last 3, are against Chicago White Sox. So here, our magic number against the Twins is 6. I mean, the city is absolutely on fire. And if you talk about a bunch of no-names, Tarek Skubal, that's probably the only one. I don't even know if you've heard of him. Just A.J. Hinch. Just, man, at one point, they were down to 2 of their 5 starting pitchers. They didn't even know what the rotation was going to be in throughout, you know, an entire game the day before. Then they had a big series against the Yankees when they were down. They took 2 out of the 3 of the Yankees, and one of them was in Williamsport.
I remember that.
The Little League World Series. So enough on the Tigers. I mean, for them to make it into the playoffs would just be a huge boost for the city. Right, the morale, even though things at Detroit's major on the comeback. Then I got to talk about my Wolverines here.
Well, you do know what's happening at Sox Park tonight, don't you?
No.
$10 tickets, $5 parking, because this is the night they can break the record for the worst team ever. They expect a big crowd. Do you believe that?
Oh, that's kind of negative reinforcement, huh?
Pretty much.
Yeah. But moving on to the Wolverines. I don't know if you caught much of that game against the against USC, but you talk about smash mouth football. Moving the ball down the field 89 yards with one passing play, converting from 4-1 from the 1 yard line with 12 seconds to go. I mean, doesn't get more exciting than that. So happy. I mean, you got to it puts the Texas loss in perspective. And then the Lions. The offense is not clicking perfectly, but the defense put on a strong performance against the Cardinals. The division looks tough, just like you said.
Well, the Bears lose to Houston, and Minnesota murdered them. So, I mean, what does that say about Minnesota and the Bears?
Yeah. I was a little skeptical on Caleb Williams. I mean, it takes more than, one quarterback to make a team, but really to make that quantum leap. Overall, the NFL, very convoluted this year. I mean, look what I think the Bengals are now 1-2. The Cowboys, after making, and I can't say I'm disappointed about the Cowboys being bad. Commanders, as I said, the Bengals get beat by the Commanders. Very, all the years I've done elimination pools, suicide pools, I just was like, this is going to be a tough year. And I just sat it out. So now I'm rooting for the Lions. They lost a big defensive end to injury, Marcus Davenport. But that's the NFL. That is the injuries. I mean, you have 250, 260-pound guys, they can go 4.5, 4.6, 40s colliding with each other. That's what's going to happen.
I think it's gotten, I won't say worse, but different. I was very, very young when they had the 12-game season, but then they went to 14, then they went to 16, and now it's 17. But it seems like, you can get enough ends. They're not all the same, obviously, or running backs. But when you start asking, usually your offensive line, unless you have a bad year, most of your offensive linemen make it through the 14 games or to 16, and I've noticed 17. In the last few years, but now we're at 17, and I've noticed the last few years, I mean, was it the left tackle on the, was it the Eagles last year, had a good year, a real good year, and they had a spot in the middle of the thing where they were like 1-3, and it was the 3 weeks their left tackle, 4 weeks their left tackle was out. I mean, I don't know that anybody has that kind of depth on the offensive line. So I mean, in 17 games is a lot, because those guys play, they don't change out like the defensive guys. I mean, if you start 17 games, you play every play for 17 games. If you're the center, for God's sake, I mean, you don't. The other guys that come in for a series, that doesn't happen in the old line. I mean, I wonder if we're at the end of our rope here, and as far as we can go in terms of games. We surely are in college, even though the bettors would like to see these kids play until June, but.
Right.
I don't think.
No, it's injuries, man. And at 17, and that's just more money for the TV, more money for the owners, and some spread down. I mean, you also saw the proposals for NFL wanting to go to private equity. So if that doesn't smell a top to you, I don't know. I mean, these contracts can keep getting bigger and bigger and bigger. But you're right. I mean, it all comes down to the durability. And these injuries are just brutal, too. I mean, you see these guys go down. I mean, not only is it like they're out for the game or whatever. I mean, a lot of these guys are banking on this stuff for a career. And, to get a devastating injury like that. I mean,
why is everybody – I mean, I know my football guys only give me crap about this, but why are guys in college wearing shorts? I mean, there isn't a guy there that isn't playing in shorts. Name a guy whose pants were the knee pads actually over his knees. Everybody's playing in shorts. I mean, if you want to stop the injuries, you need to slow the game down somewhat. And the fans – probably could care less if the game was 5% slower. But what did the guy I went to see Well, yeah, what's the they had a the Economic Club of Chicago had a thing where they were honoring Virginia McCaskey. This is a long time ago, and Goodell was up there and he said something about sometimes the average NBA player has more weight of pads on than an NFL player, if you don't count the helmet. The offensive line, they don't wear any shoulder pads. They just put their hands out there and shove. There's no need.
And how about how boring the kickoffs now?
Well, yeah, you know what? There's always been that big discrepancy since the special teams guys don't get tired. They're just hanging on the bench, and they come in. The amount of injuries on kickoffs versus regular plays has always been, what, like 10 times?
Yeah.
Eight times, something like that. So so then you went to the idea, okay, we just kick them all out of the end zone. Well, that's no fun either. So they're trying something in the middle. You know, let's see if it works. If it doesn't,
they'll take a little bit with it. All right, Chief, I've got to hop.
All right,
I'll
buddy.
Just say from a market perspective, S&P perspective, you know, the Fed did what the Fed did. We're developing resistance. We're consolidating. The bulls got to push us through to 5,800. That's it. That's all I have for you. And
all right,
as always, on an upbeat note, go blue.
There you go. Do we have Kenny?
Yeah, we do.
Sounds good. Hey, Kenny, what's up? How are you, buddy? If the 10-year rate keeps creeping up, is the market going to care, or are we just going to keep pouring money in?
Here, I can't hear you.
Well, is the 10-year rate going to keep creeping up here? Is that going to put a little shroud over this market that appears to be going to go up every day, or what?
I got to tell you, it gets more incredible to me when I just look at how the market has reacted to coming up into this rate cut, and now even after the rate cut, and yesterday's news that three or four of them got up there. Naturally, they're all going to support the decision. I get it. But not only did they support the decision, but it seems to me like they fully supported another 50 basis point rate cut if, quote unquote, the data demands it. I don't even think the data demanded it this time, but yet, you know, they're already trying to prepare the markets for a potential another 50 basis point rate cut, which I think is clearly ridiculous. And I think that really screams concern. I don't see if they do, you know, a full percentage point cut in two meetings, how that doesn't suggest to anybody, maybe we're a little bit concerned. You know what I mean?
Well, what's the? I love the pushback a little bit, especially when I agree with what somebody says, which I just did. I'm going to take the side of the. I'll be the good looking girl on TV that knows nothing, but is going to. I'm going to say. Kenny, what are you talking about? We want the market up. We want asset prices up. Yeah. We want rich people to make money. We're going right back to the last 5 years where every single day we went up, and if you had an asset, you made dough, and people get to borrow money for less than the inflation rate. And by the way, you may think the inflation rate is 5%. We're just going to say it's 2. Screw you.
Right. And that's what's really frustrating about it, right, is because I think that's exactly what they're saying, is that we're going to lower rates and we're going to create, you know, all they're doing is creating a bigger asset bubble, right, which you and I know one day is going to burst. And that's what I think is so frustrating to me. But I also understand, and somebody made the point yesterday that was very clear, that, you know, they're talking about also cutting rates because it cuts the cost to the government, right, because the massive debt that we have is going to bankrupt us pretty soon if they keep rates at 5 or 5.5 or 6%. So they have to force them lower to try to help out the government, so they're not paying as much on their treasuries, which I think is completely ridiculous, because the more treasuries they bring, the higher the yields are going to go anyway, so rates are going to go up.
That's
a whole other conversation.
I think what you might be alluding to here, and I might be wrong, but I'm reading between the Kenny lines. I think what you might be alluding to here, and it's kind of my hope. I think we're both thinking that this time around, the market's not going to buy this crap, and we're not going to have 10-year rates at 2% when the inflation rate is 4.
Yeah, I hope not.
But you know what? If you're one of them, whoever them is, why do you think you can't get away with it again?
Well, you can, and Austin Goolsbee is one of them, right? He's a good guy and everything, but he's so far left, he's almost right. But that's exactly, he was the one that came out and said it. Absolutely not. He said that the neutral rate is hundreds of basis points away from where we are. Hundreds. That's plural. That's not 100. That's at least 200, because it's plural. So it's at least 2, if not 3. And I'm thinking, okay, rates at 5.25% were really well within the historically normal range of 4 to 6. So hundreds of basis points is going to take us down to where? If they take it down 200 basis points, it's going to take it down to 3.25%, which I think is outside of the low range, right? And I don't think, but it sounded to me like the FOMC even thinks that the neutral rate is below that at 2.9%, which I think is really ridiculous considering where we are, what our debt is, where we're going, and what the potential for inflation is. Because I really do think services, did you notice yesterday, services PMIs was up even over last month, which puts us further into expansionary territory, which just suggests that prices in the services sector of the economy continue to rise, right?
Yeah, you
and
can't.
That's a simmering problem that nobody wants to pay attention to.
Well, but if you're in, if you're one of the people in power, and one guy buys a yacht for $1 billion, and nobody else can afford anything,
yeah,
you can say that the economy is doing well because GDP went up.
Yeah, I guess.
Well, right. Yeah. I mean, once you splash money into the system, all these, what was this might have been, I don't think this was before Kenny, but it was a long time ago. We had you ever hear of a guy named Professor Goodhart?
No.
He's a guy from Oxford or someplace. Somehow, yeah. Kenny, we got him on the air. But there's something called Goodhart's Law.
Yeah.
Maybe you've heard of that. Once a study, like the CPI or something like that, becomes a target, it ceases to be useful as a study.
Right.
Because you start manipulating the target. You mean, in other words, if you manage your money supply towards inflation, all of a sudden the inflation number becomes lousy because you're managing things toward it and it's not going to be real anymore.
Right.
And I think we've got that in spades all over the place.
Right. Right, because they're not paying any attention to it. They're telling us it's not important. It's where they want us to believe it is where they tell us it is versus where the rest of us either feel or know it is, right? Because, like I said, even this 50 base point rate cut, that's not going to change how you live every day. It's not bringing down the price of food. It's not bringing down the cost of housing. It's not bringing down the cost of insurance. It's not bringing down the cost of, utilities. It's not. And so for them to say that we need it, right, it is helping out. Okay, it's helping out the commercial real estate industry because, these guys that were getting squeezed, some guys lost their places, but other guys might be able to refinance now at a low rate, and so maybe they get saved. Okay, you're right. But that's not you and me. That's not our everyday life, right?
But they don't, they don't care about you and me. Now, the people who just, you might know these guys. Who are the guys who just bought Motel 6? Or I don't know how many billion dollars. Black somebody. I don't think it's not BlackRock, but it's some black somebody. I think out of New York. Now, if they can borrow money because of this rate cut, I'm going to say maybe they can borrow money to buy this place for 5% or 4% or something like that. I'm going to say the people who used to own Motel 6 or the individual franchisees, if they were, they're going to borrow money 10, 12, and oh, by the way, if it's on a credit card, it's 25. The disparity there, I mean, why do you think these people are buying all these individual houses? Because they can borrow money at 4, and the mortgage, the guy with the mortgage is getting it for 6.
Right. Which, by the way, I think that's part of her policy plan. I heard it yesterday that she's now going to stop the people like Blackstone from scooping up, buying up all the houses, and then turning around and renting them and raising the rents to the people. That was an issue created, by the way, by the great financial crisis when they were all falling out of bed and people were losing their jobs and losing their houses. Blackstone, because they got deep pockets, went in there and started scooping up all these houses. I guess it worked for them. They scooped up all these houses. They own all this real estate now, and now they rent them out at higher rates every year, which I think clearly.
How many people?
Because I don't think to her point that she is right that shouldn't be.
Well,
right. But now it's curious how she's going to fix that.
But I mean, when I say she, her predecessors created the problem.
100%.
Now there's no way unless you go back and find out why the problem is there and have some people been able to borrow way less than other people. You need to fix that. You can't do the symptoms. You can't. What she's trying to do, decide to give everybody who wants a house, now give them 25 grand. That she's recognizing the problem, which I give her credit for, but the solution, she's not powerful enough.
It's ridiculous.
She's not powerful enough to change the solution. How many people back in 2007, 2008, you probably knew some, had a home, they paid 235 for, put down $40,000. Now the home is worth $175,000. So essentially, their equity is gone, and now their mortgage is 6.5%, and the refinance rate is 4.5%. Now these people are paying 6.5%. They've never missed a payment.
Yeah.
That yet they can't refinance because the house doesn't appraise out.
Right.
Yet, for somebody to walk into a bank and say, "God, it looks to me like the going rate's 4.5%, and I'm paying 6.5%. Can you help me out, man? You don't qualify." Yeah, but I've never missed a payment at 6.5%. Doesn't matter. You don't qualify. I mean, that is so ignorant. I can't even go there.
And yet, I agree.
Yet,
so that you're right. Yeah. That has to be fixed. Right. That has to be fixed at the very core
level. But the other people already own houses.
Right.
I mean, when Trump, through his tariff plan, and I don't know if he didn't care, Kenny. I mean, he should know enough. God, if he listened to the show, he'd know enough. He should know enough that if you mess with soybean exports to China, you're going to totally blow up the northern soybean producers.
Right.
Now, instead of saying, we know we're going to screw with these guys, let's drop some crop insurance on anybody who has a soybean farm above this parallel or whatever. We're gonna drop some crop insurance on these guys. They don't do that. The place goes under. The guy can't sell. All of a sudden, some big firm picks up all the result is always the same. So it's hard for me to understand that that's not the goal to start with.
Yeah. No, you're right. You're right. Which makes it equally frustrating, right?
But I mean, you know, the thing of it is, you're not, you know, you 20 years from now, maybe you're starting to feel like me. When the outcome is always the same, maybe the outcome was planned.
I
mean, I'm still hoping to be somewhat hopeful, like you are, that maybe the next group is going to realize this and sort of fix it. But man, I don't see any momentum that way. Do you?
Yeah, I don't see any momentum that way at all. I see momentum going the other way, the other way where, you know, it's a planned outcome, right? They know what they're doing all along,
and it doesn't seem to matter which side.
Yeah.
Even though they appear to be so different, they're not.
Both sides. Yeah, yeah.
You know, I was just talking to one of my buddies last night, and they, obviously in Chicago and these other places, it's the money porn and education and stuff, and this guy's fiancé, soon to be wife. She's a teacher on the South Side. She says that if you find a fifth grader that is doing second grade reading, you got to find. There's nobody. Between the COVID and what's going on in the city and some of these neighborhoods, none of these kids know anything, and they pass them every year. Now, I don't know what you do. I don't know if you have a bunch of 15-year-old guys that are still stuck in second grade. I don't know if that makes a lot of sense. But also, walking out with a diploma when you couldn't pass second grade, I don't know if that makes any sense either. I don't know the solution. I mean, but somehow or another, where we are isn't a good place.
Yeah. No, I hear you. I hear you, but that, and so get back to your original question: where's the market going?
Yeah,
I have to tell you, now today futures have turned negative this morning. Not hugely negative, but they were up. You know, at 5 o'clock this morning, they were all positive. Now I think they're all slightly negative. You know,
this popped back positive again.
Oh, they went back positive.
You had a second. The spoos were right, around three. You had a second to buy them. Now they're up three. You told me to make six, Kenny.
Right. But so here's what I think is going to happen. Don't forget, we are at the end of September. It's the end of the third quarter. It's the end of the marking period. So for the next 3 or 4 days, right, for the rest of this weekend, Monday is the last day of the quarter. You're going to have a lot of portfolio and window dressing, and they're tossing things around and moving things around so that they look really good when it comes to the marking period. I think October 1st, which starts the fourth quarter, that's when you're going to start to see some material weakness in the market. That's when I think you'll see the market start to correct, because it'll be the beginning of the third quarter. Beginning of the fourth quarter. The third quarter has actually acted pretty well if you look at how the market has acted, right, and how people are up. But I think then when October starts and the slate gets wiped again clean for the next quarter, that's when you're going to start to see some unrest and some, I think, some volatility and some negative pressure to the downside. And then you get earnings that start officially on October 11th, because JP Morgan kicks off. And remember, 2 weeks ago, we already heard from JP Morgan and some of the bigger banks that the analysts on the street had to start to revise downward their estimates because of net interest income was going to be different. It was not going to be nearly as robust as they thought it was because rates are coming down and blah, blah, blah. And I think you're going to start to see that impact the market, at least in the month of October. Anyway, October, you know, tends to be the worst month out of the year, 35% more volatile than any month in the whole year. So I think people have to just brace themselves to that. And that's when I think you're going to see the market back off. I think right now we're at the end of the quarter and they're just holding it up here for the quarter end marking period.
I think the 10 days that I don't know if it wasn't last Tuesday, I rattled them off. The 10 days before the Fed announcement, the rapidity with which the federal funds rate was going down virtually every single day but one shows me that they were pouring money in the system, and that you and I don't get the weeklies anymore, but the real people do.
Right.
And I'm going to guess
pouring money in the system to hold it there so that it doesn't completely fall apart as they moved into this whole idea of, oh, we're cutting rates and everything's great. We're going to just keep pumping money into the system to make it, you know, to make it appear as everything's good. That's going to be the problem.
What do you make of the Chinese? What did they do this morning? Just pour.
I didn't see the whole story. All I know is that they introduced some new stimulative measures because, quote unquote, you know, they're going off the edge, or at least they say they are. I don't believe anything comes out of China. Just between you and me, I just don't believe anything comes out of China. I don't invest in China. My only exposure to China is in things like Apple. But I stay away because I think there are too many other places around the world that you can that operate by the rules. And that call for your investment dollars. So I don't pay a lot. I saw the headline, but I didn't read the story yet about what they did.
It did
create some excitement. And, you know, China and Hong Kong both closed up significantly. Europe is higher on that discussion, on that news. And we're just churning here right now, right? But like I said, I think you have to just wait at the end of this quarter, which is over on Monday. On Tuesday starts a new quarter, and that's when I think you're going to have some of all.
Do they have the same sort of mechanism if they want to? I mean, every country seems to have a way to inflate their currency.
Yeah.
Do you have any idea? This might probably be a Russell question tomorrow. How do they do it?
I don't know. You're talking to the wrong person.
Yeah, I don't either. I mean, that's going to be a Russell question. I mean, they must have somebody. There has to be a central bank of some kind.
Yeah.
And do they just?
Yeah.
But you know, everybody's. If you own stocks, you're cheering. If you don't, you know, you're not. You know, that's we've created two societies here, and it's what do you think? If I have a little bit of a prediction here, Kenny, that in a year we might see the short-term rates under 4, and we're going to see the long-term, the 10 years, over 4.5, or maybe even 5.
Yeah, I think that's a real possibility.
What does that do? Is that positive or negative?
I think that ends up being negative, right? If longer term rates get over to 4.5%, once again, it's going to be a challenge to investors. Where do they put their money? Can they lock it in? How far out are you willing to lock it in? What's it look like for the economy if we go into a recession? What's that look like? Because I think we are going to go into a recession. I don't think we're going to go into a deep one, but I think if you really want to see prices come in, like actually drop, then you have to have some kind of at least a mild recession in order for that to reset and to happen. If you don't let that happen, then it's not going to, then it's never going to reset, right? And we're going to have to just, this is going to just be what the new prices are, right? The prices will be what they are now, and that's, then they'll stay there, and that'll become the new norm.
I think they're actually, by putting his money in, they're going to restart it. It's not just going to stay steady.
Yeah. I think that's the fear as well. I think they are going to, in both sides, want to spend all kinds of money. So I think both sides are going to potentially reignite inflation. And like I just said, yesterday's services PMI number, that went up, right? Which is, puts us in further an expansionary territory and suggests that prices for goods and services, are still on their way up, which is inflationary. So it's already built, it's already kind of simmering there, but naturally they don't want to talk about it because that ruins the narrative on why they're cutting rates, because everything's great, don't worry about it.
Well, for the person who's if the multi-generations ago, Kenny Pulcheri walks into Caesar in Rome and says, yeah, we're having a tough time in the pizza joint. And Caesar walks in the back room and spits you out a 100 or 200 denarii and puts them in your grimy little hand and says, here, have a nice day, save the pizza place. It's real easy for him because he just gave you a favor. And oh, by the way, you're fat and happy because now your pizza joint's saved. And 6 months from now, everybody else's inflation goes up by 0.1%. Does anybody really care? But you're happy, he's happy, but then once you keep doing it, the 0.1% becomes 1%, becomes 2%, becomes 10%, and the people you're favoring, they're still happy, but the other people, and you still got your favors, The other people are sitting there going, what the hell is happening?
Right.
And this is actually a lot simpler than most people make it out to be, right?
Yeah, yeah, it is.
It really is, isn't it? It's, you know, how do you get to be a fatso? You see all those milkshakes? I mean, duh. Anyway, Kenny, take care of yourself. You sound good. Talk to you next week.
Yeah.
SP Futures up 4, NASDAQ Futures up 33. How about a real quick break, and then we'll get to hell.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right here, right now, right now.
Hear ye, hear ye. The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air.
Money. Hello and welcome to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Out. Ricky on the board. SP Futures up 375. NASDAQ Futures up 28. If you wanted to catch them while they were down, buy some. You had to be quick like a bunny. They were down for about 2 minutes. They got down maybe 5 points on the NASDAQ, and then we bounced right back 35 in the last 15 or 20 minutes. We have the professor.
Hey, Tom. Are you there?
All right, buddy. Yeah, hey, we got to maybe I'll ask Ricky. We got to change your bio on Stocks and Jacks, right?
Yeah, yeah.
We'll do that. Is that Ricky, is that you or is that a Matt Byrne job?
I can get it done.
Okay. Well, Ricky's one of these can-do kind of guys.
I can do.
Well, I haven't changed. My brothers and I, we opened a business together called LC Tax Solutions, and I haven't changed the website in like 10 years.
God.
And that's kind of my job, is supposed to change the website.
Maybe you should hire Ricky. He actually does something when he says he's going to do it. Imagine that.
Yeah, it's so hard to like find time to do something as simple as that. But it's been the same way for like 10 years. And now my brother Ryan has been added to the business. He's doing all my older brother Todd's like bookkeeping clients. So Ryan's doing like mostly bookkeeping. Todd is kind of like doing these high-level accounts for these bigger firms that have more complicated returns. And he does IRS problem. IRS issue problem resolution. That's what he did in the IRS when he worked for the IRS. And then my brother Rod does mostly tax returns because he umpires like high level fast pitch women's softball. He does like the high level tournaments, the AAU tournaments all summer long in the big areas like Colorado and Vegas and whatnot. So he likes to travel the entire West Coast. So he basically just kind of does tax returns. So each one does a little something different in the business. And I'm supposed to be the web, you know, the webmaster.
Yeah, how's that working out?
It's not working out very well. Well, I don't get paid. I don't get a piece of the profit. You know, I'm kind of basically helped my brothers get this business going. And I thought about maybe adding to it, like adding a component to where you do analytics for smaller business, because our clients are all real small. Like they'll have like under, you know, 15 employees for the most part, right? So it's like a PricewaterhouseCooper for like really small businesses that are in, that have a footprint in Washington Commerce and have a footprint in Idaho Commerce, because it's right there in the Lewiston Clarkston Valley. On one side's Washington with their rules, and on the other side is Idaho with their rules, and it's really hard to navigate that stuff. And a lot of our clients have services where they provide services in both city or states. So it gets kind of really complicated for a lot of people in that area.
Well, that's when you have the guy, if you're doing consulting work for him, you have him drive over, have coffee, and charge him in one state or the other.
Yeah. Well, you know, we used to have an office downtown Lewiston, and Rod and Todd had a hard time not killing each other, and that was my job, is to prevent them from killing each other. And so what happened is we split the – Rod went to his home office in his home, and Todd went to his home office in his home, and by doing that, they don't kill each other.
God. It is well, small businesses is it's a tough world today. The world keeps trying to put you out of business, but –
Yeah. Well, our motto is if we can help you stay in business, then – we'll stay in business, kind of thing, right?
Oh, that is the truth. So, yeah. So you've got the sin of the whatever what century we're in, the 21st century, procrastination. about your website and stuff.
What's that?
Everybody procrastinates on everything these days.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, I don't know if it's... I think it appears to be procrastination from a distance, but I think when you get up close, like in a Monet painting, and, you know, from a distance, Monet painting looks like, you know, a lovely painting of people walking around a, you know, a lake. But when you get really close to it, it's just a lot of dots.
God.
So when you get up close to it, you realize you only got so much time in the day.
Yeah.
And you got a trade-off. Am I going to do this? Am I going to do that? Right?
Well, you know, it's funny how people have a different... You know, my grandmother was one of these where she had six kids, and she ran a store in their places before I was born. But she ran a store. She had one of her brothers live there because you couldn't get a job in Columbus. And then they had a boarder. Where the hell they put the boarder, I have no idea. And so she every night they cooked for nine. You know, had to go shopping every day because nobody had a, you know, freezer or refrigerator or anything like that. And her story was, you know, if you see something that needs to be done, if you think about doing it, by the time you're done thinking about it, you could have been done.
Yeah, that's some really old school thinking right
you
there.
Yeah, and she's like, you know, if I see the floor needs to be washed, I could either screw around with it for 3 hours and wonder if it really has to, or I could just do it and I'm done in a half hour.
Well, you know, I was doing that for like the last 2-3 weeks. The house just got, you know, a little more messier and a little more messier. And, you know, I was building out this health economics class. And when I build out a class, it's, you know, I got to build these online lessons that have multi-parts, and I use an algorithm to vary the answer from student to student. So it's a lot of work. And I'm not one that's very good with multitasking. I can really tunnel vision. I mean, I burrow in, and I can be at a computer for 15 hours straight just trying to get this thing done. And that's what I've been doing for the last 2-3 weeks. I've just been so focused on it.
Well, are you done?
Well, I basically, you know, finished up Saturday night. In my youth, I would have probably went out and had a beer at a local establishment, watched the Washington State Cougars play football. But I think I celebrated with a glass of milk on Saturday night.
God. I don't think I've had a glass of milk in 40 years.
Oh, man, I drink the heck out of milk. I wish I could buy the raw milk from a local dairy that's, you know, where the milk has been put into the container like within, you know, 4 or 5 hours. Because when I was a kid, we always drank raw milk. Our neighbors had a dairy, and we'd take sacks of potatoes over to the dairy, drop them in the dairy barn, and then we'd fill up our gallon jugs of just fresh raw milk, and we'd take it home, and my mom would skim the fat off the top, the cream, and then she'd make homemade butter. It was just to die for.
What can you sell? I mean, if I went to some farm here in Wisconsin or Illinois, can I buy it, or is it FP pasteurized?
Well, in Pennsylvania, they sell raw milk, but if the Amish farmer sells raw milk to somebody from a different state, the feds will come in with their SWAT teams and raid the farm at 5 o'clock in the morning.
I'm not supposed to like Amish people because they have puppy mills.
What's that?
I'm not supposed to like dog people don't like you to like Amish people because they have puppy mills.
Oh, puppy mills. I've never heard about that.
Oh, yeah. They're big on puppy mills, evidently. I don't know.
But like butchering?
No, they just like making puppies.
Oh, they're breeding puppies.
Yeah. That's why whenever you see a new breed, all of a sudden there's a million new breed puppies.
Yeah, in the South, when you hear the word mill, because every road, it seems like, is like Huffman Mill Road or something. In the South, every other road has mill in the end. And so when I think of mill, I think of like a grinding mill or...
Oh, yeah,
or,
yeah. No. They call them puppy mills. But anyway, what are we seeing all of a sudden since the Fed cut? I mean, I don't know if I mentioned it to you last week, but the federal funds rate went down daily the 8 days before the guy's obviously very telegraphed thing. And we've seen the market and gold and every other asset in the world just fly up since then. Or how much money have they poured in? Do they think happy days are here again? And should we just stay long everything here or what?
The reason why gold is going up is because, you know, maybe it has nothing to do with how much money they're injecting. Because we got to remember that the Fed now, with all these reserves, and I don't call them excess reserves. I don't call them required reserves. I just call them unemployed reserves. So the Fed's got all these unemployed reserves left over from all those actions it took back in 2008, where I just bought a whole bunch of, you know, treasuries and mortgage-backed securities and whatnot. So it flooded the banking system with what I call unemployed reserves. And the reason why they're unemployed reserves is because they have a price floor on reserves known as interest on reserves. And it's a binding price floor. It's a binding interest rate floor. And so all they do now is if they want to lower interest rates, they just lower the interest on reserves rate. They just lower it. And that what that does, though, is it does cause money to come out of the banking system. So it'd be really interesting to look at what reserves have done in the past week, which I haven't had a chance to do yet. Maybe I'll do it during the break. But when they lower that interest rate on reserves level, it's like lowering the dam. And so when you lower the dam and the dam is full of water, water will come out of the dam, right?
I'm
interested in find out if reserves have come out.
They haven't. They're not just doing that. They're putting money in. I think we're going to see a massive bulge this month in the money supply. We'll see. Coming out on the 27th.
Yeah.
But we've gone up. We hit bottom. Well, bottom was $21 trillion or something in October of 2023. With one little glitch, we've been up every single month since then. That's not how you fight inflation.
Yeah. Well, I you know, when they lower that interest rate on reserves rate, though, reserves do come out.
Right. It's a double whammy. If you keep adding and you lower the rate, then you really...
So it's going to be really interesting to see what happens to inflation, because I think it can really spark some real inflation.
Do you have any idea how... I mean, I can ask Russell tomorrow. I think he probably, out of all of us, probably knows, but you, as a professor... By the way, you know, the professor in Gilligan's Island knew everything, you know.
Yeah, he did. You know, he could create like radio parts from coconuts or something.
Yeah, yeah. But now, when China says they want to, you know, they didn't say pour money in the system, but they're talking about expansive. What do they call it? They're pushing. They're trying to expand their economy. They're really talking about pouring money.
Oh, they're lowering reserve requirements too.
Yeah,
right.
What I'm saying. What are other than reserve requirements? For people who don't know what we're talking about, if you dig up money out of your backyard and go, wow, here's $100,000, and you bring it to your local bank and you deposit it, now how much can the bank loan out of that money? There's something called a reserve requirement, or there used to be something called a reserve requirement for forever. It was like 20%. So it means you could loan out $80,000, and so if that person put it back in the checking account at your bank. Now you got the 100 that came in plus the 80, so you've actually got 180 in demand deposits, not just the 100. Now you could loan 64 on the 80, which again came back. So you the money supply goes up and down based on what people do, and the Fed is supposed to monitor that in such a way where it doesn't expand dramatically, or it could be that if the Fed wants the money supply to increase by 3%. They could actually be restricting it, because if they didn't do it, it would be up 5. So, I mean, because our system, individual people, not necessarily individual people, but people's own actions raise and lower the money supply, right? I don't think I'm wrong here. But so that's, now in China, first of all, there's no reserve requirement now, which is weird. I mean,
yeah, there's no, well, I think the way the Fed keeps the reserves, the way they keep the bank system flush with reserves is just by raising and lowering that interest on reserves rate. So if they want more reserves, they raise it up.
Plus, they have some wacky capital requirements on the banks where they don't allow them to. Matter of fact, I've never told you this, Al. One of my good friends from the Fed, we'll go nameless, I'm going to say certainly 2007, 2008, you have your like OCC, the clearing corps, and so forth, like Board of Trade Clearing and some of the big... You could have fluctuations of hundreds of millions of dollars overnight, depending on a market move, where, you know, the clearing firms could be majorly flush cash or not. So they would put that money in and out of banks. Now, if you ask yourself, if you were to ask a third grader, by the way, what do banks do? Well, you put money in them, and they loan people dough. I mean, it does. Isn't that what a bank,
put money in the bank, and the bank loans it to the Fed.
Well, but they also, if all of a sudden the clearing, one of the clearing firm, not a clearing firm, but the OCC, the clearing corp, had $400 or $500 million on, say, a Tuesday night, if they were to deposit it into a bank, the new rules, which are so bleeped up, that now has become hot money. And the bank actually has to have more capital. Instead of being able to loan that out and make money on it overnight, they now have to have more capital. So banks would actually turn down the deposit. So you have a bank. Let's see. They won't give you a loan, and you can't give them money.
Wow.
I mean, duh. And so you find out your major clearing corp, Board of Trade Clearing, or CME Clearing, and OCC, I think now have direct and probably DT. Who does the stock? It's a DTS, whatever. They do all the stock clearing. DTC. They have their own opening into the Fed as if they're a bank. So if they have $500-600 million and a bank doesn't want it, they can deposit it at the Fed overnight, which should never happen when you got a banking system like we have. So yeah. there's other ways other than the reserve requirement where they stop these people from making loans. Like if you want to go in and get a loan for your two brothers decide they want to get along and all of a sudden want to build an office, you would think that if you have a corporation, all those things, that they can go in there and say, hey, our accounting firm has made, you know, $300,000 after paying each other for the last 20 years. By the way, we want to borrow $200,000 for the new building. You know, it wouldn't be much of a building, but we want to remodel a building. We just, but whatever. They're going to say, well, gee, we need personal guarantees. We need this, that. We need you to sign. We need you to put your house up or some kind of crap out of Dodd-Frank. It's been very, very difficult for people like that. Yet if it's some big firm that does the taxes, their guy's not signing that thing personally. Well, your brothers probably are, or maybe you. I mean,
well, the whole system to me, whether it's intentional or not, I heard you and Kenny talking about this. I don't think it matters if it's intentional or not. I mean, people understand what the consequences are, and it seems like the laws that they set up, they sell them in a certain way. That's not how the consequences roll out. It just seems like it's crushing small businesses in favor of big businesses. And you know, if you read Nazi history, Nazi economic history, ignore all the murdering and death that they did. If you just look at their economic policies, what comes out of these Republican and Democratic parties look very similar to what the Nazis were doing in terms of the economic policy.
You must have been listening yesterday because I was having this long debate with Mr. Flanagan, and I run into this with a lot of, I'll call them what they are, right-wingers, debate where what we see, especially the Democratic Party doing with this and that and the other thing, that if it's not their view of capitalism, they immediately say it's Marxist or socialism. And I think, in my opinion, as I mentioned to John, we were kind of into it pretty heavy, I said, don't think for a second that that's the case. Socialism is a bunch of people like in Sweden decide we're all going to do stuff where everybody's included on everything. It's going to be...
Actually, Sweden in the last 10, 20 years has gotten pretty free.
I understand that, but I know they have, but...
Compared to the 1970s Sweden, right?
Well, my point is the idea that if it's not capitalism, it must be socialism or communism is wrong. There's something in the middle. In the middle is fascism. and what we're seeing here is not socialism.
I mean, maybe don't call it fascism because fascism is usually
it's fascist like economic power. Yeah, I'm not talking. I'm not talking about
maybe call it neo-mercantilism.
Well, but I always am quick to say it's not putting people on a train and sending them somewhere. It's a fascist economic policy. It probably comes from, I don't think they invented it, but it's kind of a, I won't say German, but it's a continental policy. It almost goes back to the time of the Middle Ages where they didn't have industries back then. It's basically three or four companies in every industry to nose up the ass of government and nobody else can break in.
Mercantilism, right?
That's maybe a better term, but it definitely is. I mean, when I was in John and I and this other dude went and did lectures in Vienna and in Frankfurt. We were actually in the boardroom of Credit Anstalt. How's that for a name? Credit Anstalt. I can't give it the right. And pretty cool. We actually had the button where you could step on it and the guy'd show up and fill up your water glass. That's pretty neat. That's pretty neat. When have you ever had that? You see it in the old movies.
Well, the Federal Reserve. We're going to the Federal Reserve. I'm taking students to the Federal Reserve in Richmond mid-October.
Make sure there's people there.
The last time I was there, the it was white tablecloth, you know, white glove service at the lunch, and I think the lunch is provided every day or something. I mean, it was pretty ritzy.
Well, make sure there's people there, because the one here is nobody here. We're working from home.
Well, that's the last time I went was like in the mid-2000s, I think it was, and it is pretty ritzy, man. They bring you the food. They have their white gloves on. If you need water, they come over for you. I mean, it's pretty. I mean, I'm used to like sporks. I mean, I have four kids. We eat places where you use sporks, or you go to the smorgasbord.
Yeah. Well, I mean, but the idea that what's happening now is socialism. What we're doing is we're seeing how many people are being cut out of the system, how economically deprived they're becoming, and we're putting some programs together to try and help them a little bit, because we recognize that that's not social. That's not the mayor wanting to be in the same kibbutz as the guy on the bottom of the end. That's socialism. We're the guy in Sweden says that, you know, the president of Sweden has the exact same health plan as the lowest guy. That's not here. We're not going anywhere near there.
Oh, no, these guys in Congress, like we said last week, they have like this gold-plated retirement program. They're opted out of Social Security. Their health insurance is gold-plated. I don't think they even have a clue. I don't think they have an understanding of how painful it is for everyday Americans to navigate these rules, and these rules that are set up to benefit the very powerful elites at these corporations. It's nuts. And you know, king, you know, we had this romanticized vision of a king being able to like autocratically dictate what's going on throughout the kingdom, but that was not the case. The king needed the property owners, the nobles, right? Because the nobles collected the taxes on behalf of the king, and the nobles needed the king's approval of their titles, right? And the same thing with the merchants. The merchants collected the taxes on behalf of the king, and so the king needed the merchants, and the merchants needed the king, right? Because the merchants got the sole license, the patent, the license to be the sole deliverer of a service or a product in the kingdom.
Yeah, well, that's basically what
the United States is today.
That's what we're doing now. And you can name, I mean, everybody thinks that we have this capitalist, which, by the way, I mean, the guy who traded the trading floor for 20 years, that's about as capital as it gets. I'm going to say bars, maybe, neighborhood bars, there's, you know, maybe getting less of those. I'm going to say barbers, beauticians, certainly in the agricultural community. One farm competes against another in a big enough way where you don't really compete against the guy next door. You're competing against everybody else. But I don't think you have to get through all the fingers to name competitive industries. I don't think you have to make it to the toes.
Yeah. It's really quite an illusion.
Yeah.
And I didn't understand how big of an illusion it was until my wife and I, we started trying to like build a real estate business in. And I think Dodd-Frank just really makes it difficult for people to even get a start on that. And you see all these large hedge fund companies over the last 10, 15 years buying up lots and lots of properties. So, I mean, it just seems like the rules are set up in a way to be barriers for any new entrepreneurs.
Oh, without a doubt.
Really drives down the entrepreneurial spirit.
Well, in my industry, You could never start a PTI today.
Yeah.
You know, four or five people decide to, you know a lot about trading. All of a sudden, you know, we took our tests and the CBOE sponsored us. They're not going to do that. Now you can't even take your test unless somebody sponsors you. There's no way. Finner would never let us in business.
You know, you brought up barbers, right? It's a really interesting thing about barbers. I've been doing the history of hospitals and medicine. And barbers used to be the surgeons. They used to be the dentists and surgeons. And when you went to the barber shop,
they were the bleeders.
Yeah, well, they were surgeons. They were actually surgeons. There's a college called the Barber Surgeons, and the people who were the first surgeons in Europe were the clergy. But in the 12th century, Rome issued an edict saying that the clergy could no longer touch blood. So the barbers, with their scissors and their knives, were very skilled with sharp objects. They were assisting the clergy because they were in the monasteries shaving the heads of the monks. So they were really good at, you know, using sharp implements.
Well, if you're going to be a surgeon, you need a sharp knife.
Yeah. So what happened is the clergy no longer could perform the surgeries. And the monasteries were where the poor received medical services. And so the barbers, they kind of took that upon their mantle. And for a while, for a few centuries, they were the surgeons, the dentists, and the barbers. And that's why the barber poles, and they were doing the bloodletting. They were doing the bloodletting up until, like, you know, a couple hundred years ago.
Yeah.
But the barber poles are red and white because the white represents the white bandages and the red represents the blood on the bandages.
Well, the if you were a man who read a lot of legends, Little John took Robin Hood in his final days to be bled at the barber, and it killed him.
Yeah, yeah.
I can't imagine why people would do that.
Actually, yeah, I don't know what it is. I mean, you know, long hair was considered like an antenna for evil, so people had their hair cut for those reasons. The monks had their heads shaved. So, you know, just when you can't explain things, you come up with pretty interesting things. But, you know, a really interesting thing about medicine, medicine either had like a mystical, you know, if it looks like a liver, it'll treat the liver kind of thing, to like a trial and error thing. So you run the gambit in terms of herbalists. And herbalists were your first pharmacist.
Well, there's still the Chinese. It's still a huge thing.
Yeah. So you have all these teas, these herbs. They were
a lot of them work pretty well. I know a guy here, he actually wrote a massive book here in this country. It's got to be a foot thick on Chinese medicine. The guy was on the faculty in Chicago. He's brilliant.
Yeah.
And a lot of that stuff works.
Michael Savage, when he was Michael Weiner, he had a PhD in epidemiology, and he wrote this book called Health Medicine, Health Foods, or Earth Medicine, Earth Foods, or something. And he has this list of like herbs that the Native Americans did. And what the Native Americans did is they got to the point where they were doing the trial and error, and they were basically, the medicine men of the tribe were these herbalists. And the difference between herbalism and pharmacy is that in pharmacy, the herbalists became the pharmacists when they were able to isolate these chemical compounds within these foods.
Well, that's
herbs. That's, and they were able to isolate it, and then they were able to concentrate
that's
it.
That's the new. Well, we got to go to break here, but I actually had a long conversation with this Chinese doctor and his assistant, and they were trying to get some of the stuff mainstream.
Yeah.
But you just, by the way, without maybe not knowing, you just hit the nail on the head. I'll tell you, the drug that everybody has taken since they were probably, you know, however old you were, and you can name it, would never be able to be approved today. Can you name it?
Aspirin.
Yeah, and you know why?
Well, you know, the pharmacy wants to be able, aspirin comes from a natural, food, right?
What is it, like a bark or something? Yeah.
Yeah.
But nobody can tell you why it works.
You can't patent like zinc. You can't patent zinc combined with.
I think it has to do with nobody knows exactly what an aspirin makes it work.
Yeah.
So, in other words, if the Chinese doctor put together four teas he's known for 500 years in the legends, and the four teas taking a drink make you lose weight or do something. Unless they can tell you what exactly is in there working, you're never going to get it approved.
Yeah. Well, but basically that's mercantilism again, right? Because the pharmacy companies want to be able to patent these drugs to have monopolies granted by government. And so this is the whole lie, really. It's how you keep your competition out of a space you want to compete in. You want to find the formula, the mechanics to create it in a lab. And so you can keep your competitors out by saying, well, if you can't describe how it works technically, you can't patent it, right? It's just more mercantilism.
Sure. Well, in Austria, real quick, and then we got to go to break. One of the dudes was telling us that even like being a lawyer, if you're 32 years old, you're living like you're in college, maybe, because in order for you to, you have to put in so many years in one of the law firms before they relent and make you a partner, and maybe you start making money when you're 35 or 40, and then when you get older, you got nothing but dough. And I said, why can't you just go be a lawyer when you're 32? Oh, you can't get into like the courtrooms, or nobody will ever rule in your favor.
Yeah, it's mercantilism.
Yeah, it's whatever it is. But I mean, we're heading that way here. I mean, I don't see how. I mean, I can't imagine if
there are shoots.
Well, if you and I lived another 60 years, do you see anybody being able to? They'll fall from their own weight. But not because of any kind of. Is anybody going to break into this Microsoft thing they have, Monopoly? Annapolis.
Well, Tom, I'm going to tell you, there's some shoots of hope out there. Washington State is talking about getting rid of the bar exam, right? That's a major hurdle for people. And licensing, that's another thing I learned, is licensing was intended to keep women, black people, and Jewish people
but
out
I don't
of
think,
these.
Think of it as though if you look in, you got me started on this, but because we do need to branch off here. But on the law stuff, it doesn't, I don't know how many lawyers you know. If you hang around in Chicago, I mean, I go to two or three places where everybody's lawyers. There's the lawyers that handle stuff for you and me. Okay, and there are the people that maybe represent, you know, police guys or fire guys or regular people who do some, I'll say, low-end divorce work. The guys that are scrumping around for people that get, you know, traffic tickets and drunk driving, they are a totally different group of people than the guys that are in these big firms charging everybody $700 an hour. It's not even close. I mean,
finding a big count to put the lunch on.
Yeah, I mean, the regular guy going from between 26th Street and Skokie and actually representing people that are, you know, have issues, they don't. They're hustling their ass off, and they maybe are making a, you know, I'll say a nice to minorly handsome living. Not even close to the dudes that have the offices. Don't even go to work $600-700 an hour for, you know, corporate this and corporate that. You're not even, for you to say somebody's, so it doesn't matter whether there's a bar. These guys have more, they don't, used to be they would restrict the amount of lawyers through the exams. Now they don't care. They don't care because there's four or five big firms that get their nose right up the ass of government and all these things and are into these high courts. And if you're not paying them, you're not going anywhere. It's already so isolated. They don't care. If young Carl goes to law school and so it doesn't do him any good. It's like a guy getting his law degree in Vienna. Doesn't do him any good.
It's virtue signaling. Yeah. Those lawyers they mentioned that are doing those traffic tickets and whatnot in Chicago, they're like Bill Murray's character in Wild Things. Yeah. Remember him, that lawyer?
Yeah, yeah, I mean, but I know actually some of my
those guys are really smart.
Some of my best friends, that's what they represent people all day long.
They're just tough, smart guys.
They're going from place to place, and they're going to this district attorney, that district attorney. And they go into federal court. Federal court's got, you know, 15 guys there with all the money in the world coming at you. Federal court, they win 95% of their cases. Hmm. It's unbelievable. S&P Futures up 1, NASDAQ Futures up 11. I mean, every time you look at an industry, it's not just the industry. There's levels of everything, right?
Yeah.
I mean, there's levels in your industry. There's guys that never teach a
government,
class.
That's what
do
government
right.
does. Government issues protections for people who have power and clout.
Without a doubt. We'll be right back. Stacks and Jacks.
Individuals and businesses with tax problems, listen carefully. Do you feel like you're losing control of your finances? If you owe over $10,000 in back taxes or have unfiled tax returns, we can help you take back control. The IRS is the largest and most aggressive collection agency in the world, and they can seize your bank accounts, garnish your paycheck, close your business, and file criminal charges. Take control of your tax problem now by calling the experts at U.S. Tax Shield and take advantage of the Fresh Start program and new laws that allow us to negotiate a settlement for the lowest amount possible. Our Better Business Bureau A-rated team of tax attorneys and enrolled agents can stop collections and get you protected so you can take control of your financial future. Call now for a free case review and a low price guaranteed quote to get you protected today. Call now. 800-388-4901. That's 800-388-4901. U.S. Tax Shield. 800-388-4901.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Here, right now.
Well, welcome back, Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Allen. We're Ricky on the board. SP Futures up 1. NASDAQ Futures up 14. We've been up most of the time. We've ducked down a little bit once. And now we're back to almost flat. Over in Europe, everybody else is up because China is going to try and stimulate their economy. But we're trying to figure out what exactly they're doing. Probably report on that tomorrow when Russell's here. We're in Europe, the DAX up 106. They're down a little bit from a minute ago, but they're still up. Up 106.6%. FTSE up 13. That's only 0.2%. CAC around, however, is up 94. That's 1.3. So they're the biggest mover there. Over in Asia, everybody's up. Nikkei up 216.6%. Hang Seng up 753. 4.13. Back up to 19,000. They were pushing 17 a while ago. Shanghai up 114. 2863. Again, they're all up over 4%. We'll see what this policy stuff is tomorrow and what they can actually do. We'll see. Dow up 61 yesterday. S&P up 16. NASDAQ up 25. So upside, but not very much. bonds. 10-year keeps moving up another 7 basis points. We're over 3.8 now, 3.81. The Bund up 2, 2.19. Japan up, down 5 basis points, 0.82. They're part of it. What's going on over there? Oil up $1.58. Everything's inflating here a little bit in the last 2 weeks, in case you're not noticing. 71.95. Brent up 191. 75.41. Natural gas down 2 cents, 2.58. RBOB up 3 cents, 2.02. Gas was up 30 cents last week, the week before in the burbs. Gold down 90 cents now. It was up 6.80 euro, but it's right in this middle, 26.51. It's still kind of running all-time high. Silver up 9 cents, 31.18. Silver was way up, then it took a big drop. Now it's creeping back. Copper up 11 cents. That's a big move, 2.5%, 4.46. Every day it's threatened to buy some copper stuff for my people. I can't find a stock I like, so I haven't done it yet. So maybe I should have yesterday. FX. Euro is up slightly to 1.11. The British pound's almost up to 134. That's been the big mover against the dollar. The yen is actually down a little bit to 143.98. And we have Bitcoin up 214, 63,582. Ricky, what do you got for us? Trevi, Weather Sports. Cubs are out of it. Are you going to Sox game tonight? Watch him lose the record for 10 bucks?
Maybe. I might. Morning, Chief. It's currently 7:40 a.m. here in beautiful Chicago, 65 degrees. Right now with a high of 66, periods of rain, so beware of slower travel and probably some reduced visibility. Drive safely. Tonight will be mostly cloudy with a low of 62 degrees. So we're to Phoenix, Arizona, 75 degrees right now with a high of 107. Sunny with the temperature approaching the record of 108 set in 2002. Excessive heat warning is in place. Tonight will be clear with a low of 78. Traffic in Chicago is kind of a mess right now. Inbound heading from Monroe's, 49 minutes. We're looking at about 81 minutes. Inbound Edens from Lynn Cook. Inbound Eisenhower from Wall, 47 minutes. Inbound Dan Ryan from 95th, 29 minutes. And Stevenson from 24 to the Dan Ryan, 45 minutes. Lastly, sports. Yesterday in the MLB, Cubs lose to the Phillies 6-2. Diamondbacks lose to the Giants 6-3. Today we got Cubs playing the Phillies again at 5:40 p.m. The White Sox playing the Angels at 6:40 p.m. And the Diamondbacks playing the Giants again at 8:40 p.m. NFL, last Sunday, the Bears lost to the Colts 16-21, and the Cardinals lost to the Lions 13-20. This Sunday, September 29, the Bears play the Rams at 12 p.m., and the Commanders play the Cardinals at 3:05 p.m. Back over to you, Chief.
The now I got a kind of a very – I know where you are on this conceptually, but hear me out on the question. We've got a – on the last couple of days, we've got Trump, obviously, running for president. Versus John Deere. And I don't know if you've read this story where John Deere is threatening to move a whole bunch of their production to Mexico. And Trump says, if you do that, I'm going to plop a 200% tariff on you. Okay, so, you know, some people might say it's a little bit heavy-handed, blah, blah, blah. But there is, I know you listen to the show a lot, Carl always talks a lot about how, I'll set the stage, where If you and I got a factory in Texas and we're dumping crap into the Rio Grande, and the U.S. government or Texas says, hey, stop dumping crap in the Rio Grande, and we say, screw you, and we move across the river, so now we're not in America and we dump crap in the Rio Grande on the other side, it's still in the same river, right?
Yeah.
Your minimum wage law is 10 bucks, I'll go across the river and I'm paying 3. Carl has always been a proponent, if you could do this, I don't know how the hell you'd do it, of tariffs not being necessarily punitive, but being an equalizer. You can't just go somewhere else and pollute and have child labor without us evening it up. We're not going to make it an advantage for you such that everybody here has to do the same thing, so nobody has a job and everybody can breathe. Conceptually, I don't like tariffs. I like free trade, but free trade isn't what we've been getting because the governments are doing what they're doing. Where do you come down on all this? I mean, I don't know. I mean, it doesn't do you any good here to have labor contracts and, I'll say, minimum wage laws. You know, I know what you think about those, but in general, it shouldn't be, okay, your competition is 15-year-old kids in China making $1.50 a day. I mean, how do you equalize that? Or can you?
Well, first of all, I think it's all bluster. I don't think he's going to be able to slap a 200% tariff on John Deere tractors. I just don't think that's possible. I think maybe a 50% tariff would probably happen. So I think a lot of what Trump says is hyperbole and over-exaggeration.
I get that. But I'm saying, the concept of trying to equalize the gain you think by going out of the country. Yeah. That's not just a Trump thing. That's other people have that thought too.
Well, as a libertarian, I'm actually, because I recognize what passports and border walls and all that are for, right? They're intended to keep a tyrannized people trapped in a state where they can't make a choice for a different life. So me personally, in the absence of like welfare programs, I'm an advocate of no border walls and no passports, because I know what they're used for. They're used to keep people trapped in an oppressive system. And I'm in favor of 100% liberty, honestly. You know, if two adults, yeah, it doesn't matter if it's a high school football player and his parents and somebody that wants to give $1 million for his name, image, and likeness. In my opinion, that until that kid is 18, that kid's name, image, and likeness is the property of the parents. Once he turns 18, that's his property. And if they want a contract with somebody that wants to pay him $1 million to promote their pizza place, that's their business. And the state has no business getting in between the parents and the person who wants to pay him money. When it comes to John Deere, where they want to set up their factory, you know, Trump had no problem with Boeing moving from Washington State to South Carolina. Now, why did Boeing move from South Carolina or Washington to South Carolina? Because in Washington State, I mean, there's a reason why we in the Northwest call it the Communist Northwest. I mean, it's really difficult to do business there. So Boeing gets up and moves to South Carolina. And I don't know if you remember this, but that plant was a $1 billion plant, and they're about ready to open it, and Obama's labor department says, no, you can't open it because you're doing this to, you know, take jobs away from the union workers in Washington State.
Which they were.
Yeah, they were, right?
Yeah.
What would you rather have? Would you rather have Boeing open up a $1 billion plant in South Carolina or Boeing open up a plant in Mexico?
Yeah, because except here's where I have a pushback pretty much always with my buddy Hal. Nothing happens in a vacuum.
Yeah.
If we still had McDonnell Douglas, if we still had who are the other guys? Lockheed was still doing passenger jets. If we still had that kind of competition, I'm all for you. You can't let Boeing become the only place and then decide to.
Well,
mess
government did that, right? Government,
yeah, but I'm saying now, but now when they use that power to mess with their union, they're using power they probably shouldn't have.
Yeah.
But you gave them the power. Like, the same thing, same conversation we had before the break. Once you make somebody the nobleman, you have to make sure the nobleman doesn't get all the money other people don't even eat.
Yeah. But if you force Boeing to go back to Washington State, Boeing's just going to go to Mexico, right? So government policy
is...
Yeah,
the point is now, if they do go to Mexico, do you do something about it like Trump wants to do?
Yeah. Well, I think if they do that, then what's going to happen is Boeing's going to have this cost structure embedded into their planes, and they're probably going to skip more. We know what the problems that Boeing has right now. They don't really face a competitor in the United States. When you don't have a competitor, you know, and margins are tight, and margins are going to be tighter even with that, then, you know, are we going to buy more Airbuses from Europe? And if Boeing goes out of business, now Airbus is basically the only airplane manufacturer on the planet. And now that they have a monopoly, they can skimp on quality.
All power corrupts, even monopoly power. Can I keep that one for myself?
Hey, and the reason why that happens is because history tends to repeat, and repeated history repeats repeatedly.
Yeah, well, whenever you have, I'm not saying you don't, but I'm sort of surprised. One of these days, I'm gonna really wreck your life, and I'm gonna say, you know, you should go back, which you've probably already done, and research the history of railroads.
Yeah,
every single dirty trick, every single monopoly dirty trick was done in that 40-year period. It's just right there. People don't care.
Oh, it's right there. And yeah. Murray Rothbard presents a really interesting history of the railroad industry, of the steel industry, in his Progressive Era. It was published, like, I don't know, 10, 15 years after his passing. So Murray is just, he's my favorite economist. Second is Thomas Sowell, and third is Walter Williams. Probably because Walter Williams and Thomas Sowell and I all have this shared history of extreme poverty, you know, growing up. Through high school and grade school and whatnot. So, but Murray's history of it is really fascinating. And but Murray's still publishing to this day. I think there's a fourth volume coming out for his Conceived in Liberty, History of Colonial American History. And there's like a third or fourth volume coming out for his History of Economic Thought. They're finding just troves and troves of stuff hidden in boxes where he didn't have the time to publish it, right? So
wow. Yeah.
Fascinating history.
Well, the amount of work it used to go, probably still is if you want to do it right. If you look at the Monetary History of the United States, written by Milton Friedman,
can you imagine doing that back then without the technology?
I mean, you look through it, you read some of the stuff, and I still research it. If I want to talk about an era on the show, I'll dig through it. I mean, it's not exactly midnight reading, but as I've aged, I look at one chart in there, and I'll see the chart, and it'll be, hot money, something money, some other kind of money. You got to get the definitions down, because hot money is not the same as M1. It was the way people had money back in those days. It was the currency was hotter than the other stuff. Do you actually know the definition of hot money, or do I have to? I'll look it up next time you come on. But
yeah, I'm not sure what it is, but I'm thinking maybe is it money in the peanut butter jar or something?
I think it was it may have been the stuff in circulation plus. I don't think there were demand deposits back then because nobody had checks.
Anyway, well, people put a lot of money in the cupboard, right?
Yeah, but I'm saying you look at any one of the charts and you go, holy bleep, it had to take somebody a month to do this chart.
Can you imagine the regressions?
Yeah, where do you even go find the info? But I mean,
they still present simple regression with all those old school formulas, right? Sum of x, sum of x squared.
Yeah.
They still teach it that way, but that's how you had to do it back then.
Oh yeah, well that's what we did in grad school. But what I'm saying is when you plunk, I'll give you a simple example, and no man can do one thing. And it's like when you're talking about we're too late to be free, I guess is my argument with you. Even though I'd love to be free, I don't know that we're the first railroad out of Chicago. I bet you won't guess this unless you've heard me say it before. First railroad out of Chicago actually was the Chicago and Galena, because there was a silver mine in Galena, believe it or not.
Galena, Illinois?
Yeah. But, and 15 years later, it was like 12 railroads in Chicago. But it was like the first one.
It must have been some silver mine.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it was plus
built a railroad.
Plus, it got you to the Mississippi River, because Galena's right on the river. So that was sure
part of it. Oh, okay. So it was part of that Mississippi River.
Part of that. So the railroad goes out there, and the track's still there. Still, I don't know if they probably still use it for freight. I mean, there's no passenger or anything. So all of a sudden, if Hal's grandpa, great-grandpa, has a farm along the way, and he says, hey, there's a railroad here. I got this corn stuff, or this probably wasn't corn. It probably was soybeans or something. How about I get this to Chicago? And you say to the railroad, how much is it? Now, there's no roads. There's nothing, no close way of getting there. Maybe there's a wagon track you could man your way back to Chicago. Railroad guy's going to say, gee, I don't see any competition. How much you got?
Right.
So when you see these massive ICC things where all these rates were generated by the government and all that stuff, it wasn't like they decided to go sit in a room and do that stuff without air conditioning for fun. They did it because railroads were, if there was competition, they're charging you 20 cents a bushel. If there wasn't, they're charging you a buck a bushel. They're absolutely wrecking the economy because they were given the monopoly. It wasn't
Tom, that only works in the short run because an entrepreneur is going to see these incredible margins that these guys have.
Yeah, but you had no ability. The government gave you the property for the railroad.
That goes back to mercantilism, right?
But I mean, the
government gives you a monopoly.
Yeah, but okay, now we'll make Ricky the slime ball. He owns the railroad. Ricky's not a slime ball, but let's make him the bad guy. He owns the railroad. Now, there's only going to be one railroad, the Galena, right? Now, you and I go in there and we say, hey, looks to me like this Ricky guy's screwing these farmers. We can do one of three things, really. We can build a road, which we did 40 years later, and then you didn't have to worry about the railroad anymore because the trucks were the competition, right?
Well, the mine's also defunct, too.
Well, but I mean, now your agriculture's picking up and the railroad picks up another reason. We can do that. We can say, well, gee, let's let Hal and Tom build a railroad right next door a mile away. Well, that's not going to happen, right? You really need one. Or we can say, let's just regulate how much Ricky can charge. Well, number three, although it's not perfect, is way better than the first two, right? Then years later, when you got roads all over the place and maybe another railroad 20 miles south or 20 miles north, then you don't have to worry about it anymore, right? But there was a period of time.
Railroad could go south too, right?
Well, or not when there was only one. Not when there was only one.
They could ship, via the Mississippi.
Not then. There were no locks and dams.
Well, maybe somebody sets up some locks and dams, right?
I'm saying, over time, let's just say you're a super endowed, very wealthy professor. Just say you were one of those guys. Your idea of 40 years is a hell of a lot different than the farmer.
Can we, instead of saying it, can we make it happen?
Well, that'd be nice. Now, but your idea to the farmer is, don't worry, in 30 years this will all even out. And I'm going, yeah, but I got this crop like this year, professor.
Well, I don't think that's what did in the Midwest prairie farmer. What did in the Midwest prairie farmer is this idea of land communism that the federal government engaged in, where it limited their homesteads to like 180 acres, and they needed at least 800 acres on the drier land to make it profitable.
Well, you didn't need 800 acres until you got a tractor.
Yeah. But what I'm saying is,
a hell of a plot. You'd have to have one big fast horse to be able to do 800 acres on your own with a plow.
180 acres worked in the wetter lands of the East Coast. But on the prairie, I read analysis where the homesteaders needed at least 800 at minimum to make the homestead profitable or to break even.
Well, did you probably have, but maybe on the interstate, I don't know if you can see it so much, but you take a regular highway, an older highway across Ohio, Indiana, and Illinois, and Iowa.
Oh, I'm digging that highway lots of times.
Okay, so,
wow.
So what do you see? I've done a lot of, there's some beautiful rails to trail stuff, and I'm going to try and do some of this next summer. I'm get my bike all done, because I used to love going on those rails to trails things.
You have a Harley?
I'm talking about a bicycle.
Oh, a bicycle. Okay, all right.
Where the old railroads, they make bike trails out of them. They're spectacular.
Oh, wow, okay.
One that is a gorgeous one. And
how are you like Bill Walton that can go from L.A. to San Diego on a weekend?
No, I used to my brother is really, really into it. We decided to do the I&M Canal has a bike trail. So we started in We didn't get into water. We started in Shanahan, and Audrey dropped us off, and we went, I'm going to say, 36 miles to Marseille.
Well, that's impressive, yeah.
Well, a lot of it was, I don't like being on the limestone. A, you got to pedal harder, and B, yeah, it's dirty as hell. I mean, it's okay.
You need a wider tire, too.
A little bit, yeah. Well, I didn't have the racing tires on mine. An inch and a half, so they were okay in the limestone. They wouldn't have made good off road, but they were okay in the limestone.
Can you imagine doing an old school 10 speed on there?
I'm saying if the tires gets narrower, you got to be careful. But yeah. Anyway, so the first part is really cool because you got all the. They actually have spots where there's like streams where the canal is on a bridge. There's water in the bridge over the creek.
Hmm.
It's like an aqueduct basically. And they have these little locks that are all busted up. But you can see all the stuff. But then once you get further down, it's all just there kind of for show, and there's a road on each side and that kind of thing. So we get to Marseille, and it's like 30-some miles. And this was a few years ago, but still, I'm like, I've kind of had it. And Darren, let's are we ready to start back? And I go, ready to do what? Well, let's start back. I said, I got that big Suburban. So I gave these keys to Audrey. I said, you see that bar over there? that nice outdoor seat, how nice it is. And boy, that beer looks cold. I think I'm going to go sit right there, and I'm going to call Audrey and say, come get us.
How hot was it out?
It was 75. It was warm, but it wasn't brutal. But, it was 35 was enough. And Audrey came and got us. We went to this German place for dinner, had a nice dinner, and I was happy as a clam. I didn't have to ride back. Same thing happened to the two knuckleheads, my brother and Dr. J, suggest we go biking in San Francisco.
And we're gonna go, that's brutal.
We bike over to Golden Gate. And the two of those guys, John's in great shape, and my brother, all he did was ride his bike. So, of course, they leave me in the dust. So, you know, and I go across the bridge, and I'm going, not only is it cold up here, this railing isn't very high. And you're up there, and I said, you know what? Eyes straight ahead, keep a steady pace, and get over this thing before you... It's one thing being in a car in the middle. It's quite another being on a bike on the edge.
Yeah.
So
what did Nick Nolte say about San Francisco in 48 hours? The coldest winter I spent was the summer I spent in San Francisco.
Oh, yeah. Well, so I get to the other side, and the hills, there's hills there that I had to get off the bike and walk. They're like,
yeah,
hills.
It's brutal.
So
yeah.
Finally, I get up and down. I make it over to Sausalito, and there are the two goofballs waiting for me. And you could go for, now there's a ferry back from Sausalito, right? But the ferry actually starts in Tiburon and starts in Sausalito. So if you wanted to, you go another 15 miles or 8 miles where it was to Tiburon. And they go, well, you ready? I go, I'm ready. You see that bike rack? You see this bar? You see the ferry thing? You guys go there. When the ferry comes back, I'll hop on and meet you on the ferry. And they go, well, the beer does look pretty good. And we took the ferry. It was cool. I mean, it was really something to do. I wouldn't do it again.
Yeah.
You know, but it was, I tell you what, it is, you know, walk across that thing, and you're up there, and it's kind of moving a little bit. It's freaky. It's,
yeah, I can imagine. The Brooklyn Bridge was like that.
Well, you remember
the Brooklyn Bridge is like that solid structure, man. It's really crazy how solid that thing is, and they built it in the 1800s.
How many people died because of from the bends?
Oh, man, it's crazy with
You know, next week, let's talk a little about that. That is spectacular how that thing was built. Yeah. So what do you, is the Fed, what'd you think of me saying to Kenny earlier, we might see short-term rates down another point and a half a year from now, with the long-term rates up a point and a half. Do you think I have any chance that that's going to be right? Not that I want it to be right. Is that prediction, you think?
Well, I think the long-term rates are kind of like hinged together, right? And if the Fed's pulling down the long-term rates, they might be able to succeed in, you know, getting rid of the inversion in the yield curve. So I kind of see long-term yields kind of like holding in a small range. And then maybe if they keep pulling down interest rates, I could see that spread getting wider. So
what the...
Which means the price, if you have one of these 10-year bonds, the price is not going to probably move very much. But if you have a, you know, a 2-year bond, maybe it moves a lot more. I don't know.
How do you answer my brother's question the other day? When are people going to get tired of loaning people? Since when is the normal interest rate become the inflation rate where people are giving money to people for zero? Because when did that happen, and is it going to be like that forever? He goes, how can that be?
Yeah, you know, the prime lenders, they're basically getting interest-free loans, right? And just subtract out inflation.
Yeah, I mean, that can't be a five-century thing going forward. I mean, can it?
Well, I just think it's just the result of all the tinkering that these interventionalists do, right?
Well, yeah.
I mean, the craziness of interest rates, the volatility that's created from it. I mean, every time the Fed speaks, it creates a wave of volatility. And I think for that reason, the Fed should not be in the business of setting interest rates. The Fed, at best, should just grow M2 at, like, you know, the rate of population growth and just...
I'm with you.
And then go fishing on the weekend.
I think in... You're actually a closet monetarist. That's exactly what Milton Friedman said.
I'm a practical economist. I know the Fed is not going anywhere. Now, I have an idea of what banking should be and what the central bank should do. It should go out of business, but it's not going to go out of business. So instead of doing what it's doing now,
maybe should go out of business, but the actual workings of it, nothing would settle if they weren't here.
It should just, at this point, it's not going anywhere. They can just go bike riding all day long. They don't have to come to the office.
They don't come
just
to the office.
Just have a computer, keep M2 growing at population rate. Take the day off, take the month off, go fishing, go bike riding on these old railroad trails.
I'll use the term from the natural, then we got to go. You're missing the point, son. I already have. They already are taking the day off. There's nobody there.
They don't need to do anything else, right?
They're way ahead of you on that one.
Yeah, they don't need to do anything else. Just have a computer. Keep getting your paychecks, $400,000 a year. Just have a computer, maintain M2 growth at the population growth rate, and just leave the whole thing alone. No more press conferences, right? I think that'll be a much better world. Not the ideal world that I want, but it'll be a much better world than we have now.
We're never going to get to ideal. Let's just get closer. Hey, stay on the line with Ricky. I'm going to sign off here and tell him what you want on your bio, and he'll fix it. SP okay, futures cool. up 6.25, NASDAQ futures up 39. No stocks going crazy here that I can see. We'll be back tomorrow. Stocks and Jacks.
That's all, folks.